No. It's just because they show. One more person. You're at five people. One more.
We're just waiting on one more.
Okay.
So are you going to join? So if you hover over it, it says either the person's organization. You know what? I'm going to take a picture of it. I know. So it, I noticed it this morning. I don't know. I noticed it in the meeting this morning, in the HEC meeting, when I tried to look to see the person. It's, but this one is different. The one I saw this morning, it says you're either your organization or the person's organization has blocked you from seeing their identity or something like that.
Okay, but now you're hearing properly now.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't show leave or end. I bet you what. See, for
a lot of different titles. Oh my gosh.
So I bet you he hit this.
Yeah, but now I'm just
okay. So you can do taxes and you can do so much. Yeah, no, but you need to store it.
Sometimes you don't see the signs on the devices.
We have Ashley and Aaron.
The Superman.
While we're waiting for a quorum or waiting for one more member to join, we are able to start with the recognition, which is item 3 on the agenda for today. It's the Southern Nevada District Health District Employee of the Month for February 2026, and that's Stephanie Romano. Stephanie?
Yeah, or I guess Vice Chair Coca, I think we'll just go ahead and call the meeting to order.
Oh, okay.
And we have Blanca on now, where we do have quorum.
Oh, okay, great.
I can start with a roll call. So we're starting the meeting to call to order at 2:34 p.m. with roll call. Member Asiva? Member Breen?
I'm here.
Awesome. Member Brown?
Oh, that's
present.
Vice Chair Coca?
Present.
Member Felice Barros? Member Hunt? Member Felice Macy Avila? Member Melendrez?
Present.
And then Father Raphael?
Present.
And then Member Nelberg?
Present.
We do have quorum.
Sarah Hunt is on too.
Okay, next on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. We can stand and start. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is recognition. So if we can, we're going to recognize Stephanie Romano for as the Employee of the Month for February 2026.
And just for record, we do have Member Hunt also on the line. Okay. So we're going to be recognizing Stephanie Romano for Employee of the Month for February 2026. And I'll just read an excerpt from her recognition into the record. Today, the Governing Board is pleased to recognize Stephanie Romano, a provider for the Sexual Health Clinic, for her exceptional dedication to the mission and values of Southern Nevada Health District. Stephanie is known for her compassion, professionalism, and ability to make patients feel safe and respected during some of their most vulnerable moments. She provides truly patient-centered care, building trust through her calm, non-judgmental approach. Her impact is especially evident in her work with PrEP patients. One patient shared how Stephanie supported him through a traumatic accident, major surgery, and severe financial and emotional challenges. She listened with empathy, endured his mental health needs, his mental health needs were addressed, connected him with legal resources, and continued to check on him long after his procedure. He credits Stephanie for being there during one of the hardest periods of his life. Stephanie also consistently steps beyond her regular duties, learning new skills to maintain continuity of family planning services, staying late to initiate rapid HIV care for newly diagnosed patients, and ensuring ongoing follow-up even after patients transition to other programs. Her unwavering commitment, compassion, and advocacy embodies the very heart of SNHC's care values. So on behalf of the CHC Governing Board, it's our honor to recognize Stephanie Romano for her outstanding services to our community. Thank you, Stephanie. I'll have you come up and take a picture with you. No one in the room for first public comment, and there's no one online.
If you wanna. Right, next on the agenda is adoption of the February 2017-2026 agenda for possible action. Can I get a motion?
I make a motion.
Okay, can I get a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Okay, so passes. Next on the agenda is a consent agenda. Okay, I guess, I'm sorry. Number one, approve the minutes for the Southern Nevada Community Health Center Governing Board meeting from January 20th, 2026 for possible action. Can I get a motion, please?
I make a motion to approve the minutes of January 20th, 2026.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Any abstentions? Any nays? Not hearing any, motion passes. Next on the
Chair Coca, we're actually due both for the consent agenda. We'll do both the minutes and the renewal of privileges for provider Tabitha Johnson. We'll just do them both together. So if there's no any other questions on that one, we'll do the motion for both.
Okay. Can I get a motion as to approving the re-credentialing and renewal of privileges for provider Tabitha Johnson from the who is the behavioral health manager for the health center?
Yeah, I make a motion.
Okay. Can I have a second? Are there any nays as to this motion? Any abstentions? Okay, not hearing any, the motion passes. Okay, next is the report slash discussion slash action. First, under that is receive, discuss, and accept the single audit report as of June 30th, 2025 from Forbis Massars LLP. And we'll hear from DJ. Hi, DJ. Thank you.
Okay, today I'm here to present the single audit report that my team has got on DJ.
No.
Is that better?
Yes.
I can be ready this time. Okay, so I am here this afternoon for my first item to represent the single audit report. So the single audit report included in your packet, it has the same results as the draft we presented. Mr. Josh Findlay from Forbis Mazars presented back in November, and then for the Board of Health, and then in December to this board. The final OMB's compliance supplement has been issued. That's why we split the reports, is because the supplement had not been issued at that time. And there were no changes to the draft we previously presented. The single audit report has an unmodified or clean opinion, so we had no findings. The final single audit report is included in the packet along with our finalized and signed financial statement audit report that was previously accepted. The Board of Health accepted the single audit on January 22nd, and it is issued, and now it should be published out on our website along with our financial audit. So the total federal expenditures included in our schedule of expenditures of federal awards was $45.4 million. And then Mr. Findlay's presentation in November actually covered all the required communications for the auditor, so we don't need to repeat that. Just an overview, our financial statement opinion, we had an unmodified or clean opinion. Our report on internal control over financial reporting and other matters, we also had no reportable findings. And now, as we said, the single audit, it had no reportable findings as well. So we had a very good year in our audits. You'll recall we did present this back in November, but the major federal programs for fiscal year 25 were the opioid SDR, National Bioterrorism Hospital Preparedness Program, HIV prevention activities, Health Department-based and Centers for Disease and Control Prevention, collaboration with academia to strengthen public health. We always call it PHI, but so those were the four programs that were our major programs for the year and were tested. I will take any questions, but again, they didn't change from the prior presentation.
Does anyone have any questions for DJ as to the single audit report? Take that as, I heard some no, so I'll take all as no. Okay. Then I guess we move on to the subsection two. Oh, okay. Thank you. all right. I'm going to, does anyone want to, I forgot my terminology, I'm sorry, make a motion as to the single audit report? Can I get a motion, please?
Yeah, I make a motion to approve the single audit report.
Okay. May I have a second?
A second.
Okay. Are there any abstentions? Any nays? Not hearing any.
For Madam Chair, I'm sorry. For these actual action items beyond the consent ones, can we get a vote in favor as well, just for the record?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're right. As soon as I was talking, I realized. Thank you. Okay. All in favor of passing the single audit report?
Aye.
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 Motion passes. Thank you. Now, next to number two, receive, discuss, and accept the December 2025 year-to-date financial report. DJ again. Thank you.
Okay, so today's report is our results through December 31st, so the first 6 months of the fiscal year. Our summary, general fund revenue, our charges for services and other, which would include our REP, is $18.64 million, and that's compared to where we would have, the budget would have been just halfway through the year. Just recall, when we do the budget, it's divided by 12 times the number of months allowed, and sometimes we have timing issues. So we would have expected it to be at $19.53 million, an unfavorable variance of $897,000. In our grant funds, we were at $2.39 million, compared to a budget of $3.82 million, and that is an unfavorable variance of $1.42 million, and there's a few things contributing to that that I'll get to on the next slide. So our total revenue is at $21.03 million, compared to a budget of $23.35 million, so it is an unfavorable variance of $2.32 million. On the expense side, our salaries, tax, and benefits is at $7.12 million compared to a budget of $8.3 million. That's a favorable variance of $1.18 million. And the variances on the expense side directly relate to the revenue, because on the grant side, if we don't incur the expense, we don't recognize the revenue, so they are related. Other operating expenses were at $14.65 million compared to a budget of $15.54 million, and that is also a favorable variance of $8.87. Our indirect cost and cost allocation is at $5.32 million compared to a budget of $6.43 million, a favorable variance of $1.11 million. Again, indirect cost is directly related to the expenditures, so that will be lower if your expenditures are lower. And then, so our total expense is at $27.09 million compared to a budget of $30.27 million. So we have a favorable variance of 3.18. So overall, our net position is at $6.06 million deficit, compared to, we would have anticipated to be actually at a $6.92 million deficit. It's a favorable variance, less of a negative, by $854,000. So that means our favorable variance on the expense side actually exceeded our unfavorable variances on the revenue side. And this is some of the detail of what I just went over, but our charges for services, we have now included quarter one and quarter two because we hit December month end. That is all of our write-offs. So anything older than 12 months, instead of waiting until the end of the fiscal year to do one big write-off, we're trying to keep that more current. And so that is actually included in the activity for our charges for services. That's where we would have a write-off. And then we do have Medicaid true-up and look-back payments following the completion of our new PPS rate. We did have some of that in the current fiscal year. We captured a lot of it in the prior year, but then this year we've actually had some subsequent payments that impact that as well. And then in the expense side, our fiscal year 26 adopted budget, which we have not brought our augmentation forward yet, had some positions in it that would have been 100% grant funded. So when we saw the lag in the expenses and the revenue, some of it's related to these 8 positions, which we did not move forward with that activity. So it's really an adjustment on the budget side, not on the actual side. Then this is just graphical representations of our activity by function. So you can see pharmacy drives about 76% of our revenue and also 64% of our expense. And this just further breaks down activity by the functions. So you can see here the pharmacy revenue is lagging by about $1.5 million. So a big portion of what you saw on the front page, the general fund lag, is in the pharmacy, and I believe Dr. Bleek is going to be presenting some information related to the pharmacy and some of the behavior we've seen this year. And then you can see the Ryan White grant side of things. The biggest contributor there is the Ryan White grant. It's behind about $1 million. And that is, again, we had those eligibility workers in that line item. And then on the expense side, on the supply part, one of the bigger numbers is the $696,000. So part of this is depending on timing of when we buy some of our supplies. If it's towards the end of the period, your expenses will be higher, and then the revenue may not come in to generate. So some of the activity we're seeing here is timing related, but you can see under total personnel costs, there's that savings of $1.1 million savings being ahead behind schedule for as of December. So in total, our expenses are $3.1 million behind where we would think the budget would be at this point. And then this is just the patient encounters by department. You can see we have our growth, the refugee health did definitely fall off. We're about 98% down on that. But I think we have seen a few encounters in the more recent months. And then you can see that the sexual health activity is down. But we do have a shift between the categories over into the primary preventative care areas. So overall, we are 16% year-over-year growth in encounters. And we still present this as between the locations. Maine is anything that's not Fremont, so some of our other smaller locations. But you can see both have growth year over year. And that's just our definitions. And then there's supplemental information that I use this to see any trends that might be happening month over month. So if you see anything that you have inquiries about, just let us know. We can certainly do that. And then it's also by type. So the first one was by department, and then this is by type, so that you can really see the activity and when it might be generated during the months. Like I've been through that, but anybody have any questions on the financials?
They look great. All the reporting and only do we have any receivables amount, something from the billing? And
we do. I think Randy and I discussed that we should have a finance committee meeting next week. Next month. And we'll discuss maybe the format for that. And then Donna Buss is our revenue cycle manager, and she's very versed in that, and we could have her come
in.
Yeah,
that number is very important. As we see on the audit report, what's great, you know, it's only at like a 10% all in receivables that they when they close the year, the fiscal year, which is good. But it's always good to see how we're doing on the billing and collections. But everything else is
I think one thing that Donna has, I know that we've had some cyclical stuff as we're working with some of the payers. And so I know that she's really working on getting her 180 days compressed, and so that's something we talked about. We'll look at a format and then bring that forward.
So this is, we make a motion. Can we get a motion to accept the December 2025 year-to-date financial report, please?
I make a motion to accept the December 2025 year-to-date financial report.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Do I have any abstentions? Any nays as to this motion? I don't hear any. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, for all these action items, 1 through 4, mm-hmm. if there is a motion, can we get an all in favor as well, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. All in favor of number 2.
Aye.
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 I don't know why I'm forgetting that today. Okay, thank you. Great, motion passes. All right. Next, as to the sub item, number 3, receive, discuss, and approve finance and audit committee assignment.
That's me. Thank you so much. This is an opportunity for us to present Father Raphael for consideration to be placed on the Finance and Audit Committee. Up there you'll see some of Father's criteria. Now we all know him well, but this is being brought forward to the board for seeking approval to place him on the committee going forward.
Okay. Can we make a motion? Can I get a motion to approve Father Raphael Pereira to join the Finance and Audit Committee?
I make the motion.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
I'll second it. It's Aaron.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any abstentions? Any nays? No, so motion passes. Welcome back, Father Raphael. Your input will be greatly appreciated. Okay, so next is number 4, receive, discuss, and approve updates to the CHCA-028 credentialing and privileging policy.
Great, thanks, Vice Chair Coca. So I'll take this one as well. some of you may recall over the last few months we've been talking about our credentialing and privileging policy. Early last year, actually it was about this time last year, we had our operational site visit, and part of our preparation for that visit discovered more current HRSA compliance guidelines that essentially allows the health center team to take care of this work and no longer need to seek board approval for these items. So we had an item earlier today that was on the consent agenda. This new policy would allow us to continue performing that work without the need to put those things on the consent agenda. Since the health center is not the only service provider division within SNHD, our primary preventative or public health division also has providers, we took the opportunity to create a cross-divisional policy to ensure that we were treating these different employee groups the same, regardless of what division that they're in. And so that's really what the policy did. We did a refresh. We took it from just being a health center specific to now being more broadly encompassing both divisions. We went back through, and you can see we've got several acronyms on there to make sure that we were all on the same page as it relates to what a LIP is, a licensed independent practitioner, versus, you know, an other clinical staff. And the policy, again, really delineates very well what is required for each group. And then we went back through our forms and updated the forms and updated the approval process. At the end of the day, really looking for our chief medical officer or medical director, Dr. Robin Carter, to help facilitate the review of these documents to make sure that everything is in good order, and then to work with our human resources department to ensure that those documents are completed. And really, since we've started, now that we're an FTCA organization, this has become pretty robust, and I've been really excited just to see that the level of knowledge and capacity with our human resources department has grown significantly. So I'm really excited for this policy. I think this helps to keep our board meetings more streamlined while still ensuring that all of their required elements are happening. This is a board approved policy, so you'll see this a policy periodically. So if there are any other questions or comments or concerns that should come up in the future, there'll be additional opportunities on a regular cadence to review this work. But the big story is it's in compliance with HRSA. This was something that was talked about during our operational site visit, and it's presented to you now for consideration for approval.
Jasmine Coca, just for clarification, so the changes that it reads here, number one is remove board approval for procedure, but you say that we still would.
You'll still need
board approval or review.
Yeah, so the policy, this policy on at least every 3-year cycle will come back to the board for review and approval. That's just part of our normal cycle in terms of preparing for operational site visits. But what would no longer be required is kind of what we saw this afternoon on the consent agenda for our one provider that was on there for your approval. Going forward, that would no longer be needed.
Okay, that's clear. Does anyone have any questions as to this policy? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Can we get a motion, please, to approve the updates to the CHCA-028 credentialing and privileging policy?
I make a motion.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any abstentions? Any nays? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Next, board reports. Does anyone have anything they want to report from the board? Any announcements you want to make? Okay, I'm not hearing any, so we'll go on then to the CEO and staff reports.
Great, thank you. Donna would be very proud of us today. I have just a couple of updates to share, and then we have a few presentations for you all this afternoon. Some really great news. The Health Center program was funded by Congress. And that funding actually resulted in a $340 million increase, which is the largest increase in the last decade to the Health Center program. So absolutely very excited to hear that. I did see some correspondence earlier this morning that HRSA now is working on figuring out what is that going to result in. Is that, will that be new access point awards? Will it be increases to base grants? So we're waiting to see what's next, but certainly some very positive news. On our Title X side, we are still very much in a waiting phase, right? So our existing Title X, this is our family planning program, the current funding expires on the 31st of March. Our team has done everything that we can to take the action that we know to take, up to including submitting essentially what we would be up for is called a non-competing continuance grant. And so since we don't have any additional guidance on how to create that grant, we submitted something using last year's guidance, the most current guidance that we have. And we submitted that in a place that's available to be accessed by a project officer. Dave continues to be in contact with our project officer, as well as with the Nevada Primary Care Association, who is the other recipient of Title X dollars. And unfortunately, this is just the best that we have right now. So certainly concerning.
And in terms of dollar amount, what is the funding?
It's about, I think, just maybe shy of 1.4 million. Yeah, 1.4 million. So it's significant. I think we've done everything that we can, including we've been on a hiring freeze this year to try to give ourselves a buffer. what we have heard, what little we've heard, is that new guidance will be forthcoming. And when that guidance comes, we will have to very quickly, within a matter of days, turn around an application. And I feel like our team will be able to do just that. But we'll certainly all feel much better once we've gotten that guidance and we know what's going to happen. So I will continue to keep you all apprised as we learn more. Again, we've done everything that we can do, up to including that next item, which is the Family Planning Annual Report, or called FPAR. We worked very diligently, Dave in the business office, along with our informatics team here, worked very diligently to get that up and get it up ahead of the end of January, in case this group was caught up in the government shutdown. So again, we've been very responsive there. And then finally, we did just submit last week our UDS report. This is our calendar year 25 annual UDS report. That really is the first submission. There'll be a second review that happens by HRSA, and then we get some additional guidance and we'll respond again. And I think we'll be looking for later this spring, and we'll provide a broader overview of some of the key takeaways from this year's report, things around like demographics and service areas and information like that. But great work from the business office. It's been very busy. So we're doing all that we can to stay on top of things.
I have a question.
Sure.
Jasmine Coca, for the record. So the $340 million, mm-hmm. when do you anticipate getting guidance as to that?
What I read this morning is that HRSA is actively working on it right now. So I would expect soon, but it didn't give a specific timeline. I think what we're all very anxious to see is, you know, a lot of health centers around the country could really just use an increase to the base grant. It's been many years since there's been an increase to the base grant. So I think a lot of folks would like to see that happen. All we know from HRSA is that they're working diligently to figure out what that's going to be, and we'll be communicating that to us soon. So as soon as we know, we'll let you know. You know, for what it's worth, there was a new Access a Point award that was closed last year as things were changing in the federal administration. So it's possible that you see those new Access a Points come back up, because all those applications were produced and submitted. So I believe that there's probably applications even there. So it could be a combination of things. And I'm speculating a little bit, but I'll tell you what I've seen in years past with base increases is that there tends to be a formula based on the number of clients being served, and with some caveat for your uninsured patients. So as you know, we have a considerable number of uninsured patients here. So should there be a base increase, and it should use a formula similar to last year, it could be something that's beneficial to our health center specifically.
And when the Title X funding that expires on March, what would be the worst case scenario, and what would be the plan if we don't get it, or if it's
absolutely
if it expires?
So it's really working with Dr. Lockett and the team here as it relates to our own internal processes and what's guided through our CBA. As I shared earlier, you know, throughout the year, and you kind of see it showing up in the financials, we've had a number of positions that have been on a hiring hold. And so, you know, that was done strategically to give us a buffering. So, of course, our every effort would be made to retain every employee. I mean, the work is clearly there. My goodness, I walked to the lobby over here at Decatur this morning, and it was just overflowing. So, I'll be continuing to work with really Dr. Lockett and DJ and Renee and Human Resources to have a plan for how best to, you know, support those.
And
those
have we ever been in this situation before? Like waiting for that in, and you know, like, you know, when they're going to shut down the government that until the midnight and it's approved.
Yeah.
Or like that.
My understanding is that in years past, we have been notified after the funding has, it would have started, that here's your award. And I think in those previous years, because there hasn't been everything else surrounding it, it's just been kind of business as usual. Mm-hmm. what's different about this time around is there has been a lot of disruption, and we have heard that there is a desire to kind of make some changes in the family planning program, and so we are anticipating that there's new guidance. It's just we're in a very much in a wait and see kind of place, but you know, I think the best that, I mean, what we've done internally to try to hedge this, of course, is to really focus on our operations, so we're less reliant on grant funding. We've had those positions on a hold to give ourselves some buffer, and then of course working with the executive team here at the health district to figure out what the best way is to move forward. You know, our intent would always be to retain every employee, right? The work is definitely there. Thank you. Okay. Just one more thing for me, and then I'll bring Dave up. I was notified a couple of weeks ago from HRSA that we were the recipient of this operational site visit badge. This is the first time since I've been part of the Health Center program that I've ever seen this badge being given out. And it's really neat. I mean, as you all know, a lot of time and effort goes into not just preparing for the visit itself, but maintaining a state of readiness in a compliance space. So, but this is a great honor to have received from HRSA, really, you know, demonstrating that we're really holding the line as it relates to delivering excellent, high quality service while ensuring that we're in compliance with the HRSA requirements. So, you know, we went through, for those that were here, we went through our operational site visit early last year. We had a very successful visit. I think we got a lot of kudos from that review team. A few things were identified, and those few things were quickly fixed, right? So this is recognizing this. And this is an email from Dr. Lockett, who has been very supportive, as you well know, of the Health Center program, and really providing the resources and support that the Southern Nevada Community Health Center needs to be able to grow and to be effective and efficient in the work that we're doing, and really be part of the broader health district's efforts of advancing public health within our community. So nice to receive that support and recognition from Dr. Lockett. And I just wanted to recognize as well too, a lot of this work happens in the administrative space, particularly in the business office and with Tawana. And so, you know, took that opportunity again to really call out the great work that each of them were involved in ensuring that we had a successful visit. So again, many thanks to Tawana and David for your steadfast work in this space. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and bring Dave up, and he's gonna talk about our Medicaid dashboard report update.
Before Dave starts, I have a quick question. So congratulations for getting the badge. Is the badge on the website for the health center, or are you allowed to put that on?
That's a good one. Not yet, but I'd like to get it up there. And kind of what I'm waiting on is in a few months' time, we'll be hearing back from HRSA, and hopefully we've got more badges to put up. Those will be the badges that go with the UDS report. So stay tuned, but I love that idea to really celebrate and have a visual about the great work that we do here. So yeah, stay tuned.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Coca and members of the board. My name is Dave Kahananui. For the record, I am the FQHC Administrative Manager. I'm gonna go over the Medicaid dashboard that we review at our leadership meetings. This is a dashboard that I personally built and update on a monthly basis so we can track our activity for our Medicaid patients. Just so that you have a little bit of context, one of the reasons that we do this is that Medicaid, because of our PPS rate, is our best payer. And because our payer mix is so lopsided towards taking care of the uninsured and most vulnerable, we financially and fiscally need to make efforts to grow our Medicaid side so that we can sustain the activity we need to take care of those that are most vulnerable. We had a goal that was approved by the board in our strategic plan for the course of 2025 to increase our visits and unduplicated patients that were Medicaid patients by 5%. Through the end of 2025, we just fell short of that 5% goal with visits. Our visits were still up, but they were up 3.68% instead of the 5%. But our unduplicated patients, we actually increased by 6.79%, so we exceeded in the number of unduplicated or unique patients that we saw. We just need to get those unique patients in more than once or twice in a year. That being said, to give you just a little bit more information, at the beginning of this year on January 1st, there was a new Medicaid managed care organization that joined the Medicaid organizations in the state of Nevada. That organization is CareSource, so we've added the CareSource numbers to this compared to what it looked like last year. So the first thing I'll go over is in the upper left corner, there is a breakdown of the patients that were impaneled to us as an organization by each of the Medicaid MCOs. Now, essentially what happens is on an annual basis, all of the names kind of get redistributed, and based on what's happened in previous years, as well as an algorithm that factors in the location and demographics of the patients themselves, they get assigned to an organization to be their primary care provider. We went through this exercise at the beginning of this year, and to kind of give you a little bit of comparative context, at the beginning of 2025, January 2025, we had 920 patients assigned to us by our Medicaid MCOs. By the end of 2025, we had 2,295 patients attributed to us, which was a growth of 149% over the course of the year. At the beginning of this year, we expected to see a dramatic decline in the number of patients that were assigned to us because of CareSource entering the market. One of the things that all of the other MCOs were required to do was give up some of their patients to CareSource, and then CareSource would redistribute those individuals. However, wonderfully, we actually grew in our empanelment when they redid that, and we grew by 11% and now have 2,538 patients empaneled to us. To kind of give you a little bit of an idea what the empanelment versus what patient mix we actually see looks like. So in the very center at the top, you have the pie chart that breaks out how many patients are being assigned to us by each of the MCOs. HPN is the largest of our empanelments at 1,476 patients that were assigned to us by them. But if you look to the right, on the upper right pie chart, this is the mix of patients that we actually see. And we saw 112 HPN patients, 132 HPN patients and 111 Anthem patients. Those typically tend to be pretty similar. And then about 60 to 68-ish when it comes to Silver Summit and Molina. We did see 35 CareSource patients. And then the orange piece at the top are individuals who just got onto Medicaid who have not been assigned to an MCO quite yet. Those numbers will shift a little bit, but this looks pretty consistent with what we saw through all of 2025. In 2025 of January, we had 246 unduplicated patients that were seen during the month. This year, during the same month, we saw 443 unduplicated patients, which is a growth of 80.1%, and puts us at 13.97% to our new goal, which is a 5% increase over what we saw last year. if you look at the section where we have the numbers of unduplicated patients seen, there are 443 patients that were seen through the course of January. And then there's two different bar graphs that are next to it. The first one shows where we are in comparison to what our goal has been set at. The green represents the goal, and the white bars are what our actual progress is. For 1 month, that's not bad. The graph that's next to it as well demonstrates how the visits were broken out for the 443 patients that we saw. We actually conducted 770 visits through the course of January this year versus 352 visits in January of 2025. That is a growth of 118.8% year over year for the same month. I'm sorry, wrong direction. Okay, so this is a representation of similar information on the left side. The pie chart shows where what types of visits that we're seeing. 600 of the 770 visits were provider visits that are billable. Those are encounters where we can bill our Medicaid. That's where we make our financial progress to help sustain everything else that happens in the health center. The bar chart that's on the top, this is a year over year comparison on how we're doing with a number of patients assigned to us, the number of patients unduplicated that are seen, as well as the visits. It goes from 2023 through 2026. We obviously, from an empanelment perspective, have already exceeded the number of empaneled patients that we've ever had as an organization, and we're well on our way to breaking the visits as well as the unduplicated patients. Just recently, and by the way, the data for that is in the table that's in the center underneath it, but then the table on the right side there is a comparison for the month of January year over year. And as you can see, we saw tremendous growth in 2026, January of 2026 versus January of 2025. In every area, we dramatically increased the number of unduplicated patients or types of visits that we saw, except the nursing visits. The nursing visits went down 72.39%, but based on anecdotal information from what's happening in the improved efficiency operations of our clinics, most of those were actually converted into provider visits, where providers were able to see and take care of patients. That's all the information that I have to share with you about that. Are there any questions?
I have a question. So based on what you just said, so how does that work when initially patients are scheduled to see a nurse and then you said they were converted to a provider's visit? So how does that happen?
So Dr. Carter can probably speak to this a little bit better, but essentially the way I understand it is when a nurse is visiting with a patient and discovers that there's something that needs some type of a higher medical licensed opinion on what's happening or what's occurring with the patient, they will make room on a provider's schedule and work that patient in to be seen by the provider so the provider can take better care of the patient before they leave.
Thank you.
Sure.
Just one question, maybe I don't understand very well, but what is the reason or the main reason why we're seeing that improvement, that growth from January 25 and 26?
I attribute the bulk of the improvements in this area to the operations team. They have done an outstanding job at working through their efficiencies with their workflows. Not only have they made more room for care access, for patients to actually get onto the schedule and be seen by a provider, but the way that they're working through the clinics has far exceeded anything we've ever seen in the healthcare, in the FQHC, I'm sorry. Their efficiency and their ability to see patients had, on average, has drastically improved. I think I saw a statistic a couple weeks ago that showed that one of our providers, for instance, was on average seeing 10 patients per day through the course of 2024, but in 2025 was seeing more than 15.
I'll just say Dave has put a lot of work into this as well on with the payers, right? Engaging the payers consistently. We've now got set meetings with each of them. As you can imagine, things aren't always going smoothly, so working through problems and trying to find resolution. And I think we've been very intentional with them saying, hey, we want to grow and you know, trying to understand what do they want to see. And part of what they're asking to see is on the care gap piece, right? Is the quality of care. And so under Dr. Carter's leadership and with the operational team creating new workflows to be able to identify those patients, contact those patients, bring them in, have those encounters, you'll see in that, you know, the chart at the bottom in the middle, the average number of visits per patient, we're basically at about 1.3. So there's an opportunity there, right, to bring patients back appropriately, to close some of those gaps, And, you know, I think what we're trying to do and what the team has, you know, been successful with is provide a great experience, right? If patients come and have a good experience and feel welcomed, feel heard and listened to, then they're more likely to continue to follow up with this. So it's this combination of all of these things, but I'll just leave you with this thought. Those are the folks that we're seeing, but you see how many are in panel to us. There's a big divide between those two, and that's normal, right? Patients get assigned to a practice. Most of us are kind of geared up to say, I'll let you know when I need something, and I'll reach out. And our team is still trying to reach out to folks to welcome into the practice. We've got new patient letters, but what I'm excited about here is the way that we're growing feels like in a normal way and something that can be sustained over a long period of time.
And I'll also add that it is true that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Throughout the course of the last year and a half or so, I have really been annoying our MCO partners, but have been able to build some fantastic relationships where they're extremely responsive now, and before they were not. So like Randy mentioned, we have regular meetings with them to strategize how to continue growing our panelists as well. And they've even offered additional resources to help us try to contact patients on our behalf as well.
Well, we appreciate all your efforts, you and your team, so thank you. We want to see these numbers continue to go up, and I think they will. Thank you.
Okay, and I believe Dr. Bleek is due next.
Good afternoon. I'm Todd Bleek, I'm the manager of pharmacy services. And I want to give everyone an update on the work of the Pharmacy Finance Work Group. Again, this is a group that formed, I think we had our first meeting back in June, July of this year. And again, specifically look at finances related to the pharmacy and revenue and expense related to that. So two main areas of focus since we last provided an update. One is the HRSA 340B rebate pilot program. Randy has mentioned this previously. I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about what that is and what's gone on with it. And then also we the Gilead Patient Assistance Program, which is provides free medications for uninsured patients. I'll explain that a little bit more as well. And really the impact of these two things on our on the health center and on pharmacy in particular. So over the past 2 years or so, several pharmaceutical manufacturers have attempted to change the way that 340B medications are distributed to covered entities. Since the inception of the 340B program, it's always been an upfront discount for covered entities, the medications that were purchased, we received a discount upfront when we purchased them. What has been attempted over the past few years is a few different manufacturers have tried to implement a rebate model. And they just said that, you know, this is how we're going to start doing it. And when that came about, HRSA said, you cannot do that. You cannot do that without our approval. And manufacturers didn't agree, and that's another issue we'll go into. But what HRSA did do is they said, well, we will try a pilot of a rebate model for providing these medications. And in October, we received an announcement that we're going to move forward with this rebate pilot. It's going to start January 1st. And so none of the covered entities really had a lot of, we didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for this. And several groups, one group in particular, a hospital group, challenge this in court, HRSA's ability to do this, and district court on December 29th, the program is supposed to start on January 1st. On December 29th, this court issued a temporary injunction halting the program. What HRSA subsequently did is they appealed this decision, and the appeals court denied that motion initially. Shortly after that denial of their appeal, HRSA withdrew their appeal. And so we went into this year, nothing changed. These medications were still available at the regular discounted 340B price, and covered entities like ours had continued to purchase these at that price. Although there's this halt on this rebate pilot, it's not the end of it. Shortly after HRSA withdrew their appeal, they started the administrative process. Because what the court found is that HRSA did not adequately consider the administrative impacts of this change on covered entities, and also consider alternatives. So after they withdrew their appeal, they started the process of addressing these administrative deficiencies. So there's no indication that HRSA is going to drop the concept of a rebate model. And covered entities have pretty much uniformly opposed a rebate model for two main reasons. It is a major disruption in cash flow, in the way cash flow works, and the other thing is it's an administrative cost for the covered entity, because it's not as simple as purchasing the medications and then just automatically getting a rebate back. It requires that the covered entity submit claims for these medications that go into a portal. The manufacturer reviews these claims and has to subsequently approve providing a rebate and then send us a rebate. So this requires some infrastructure on the part of the covered entity to set all this up, set up the data transmission for these claims, and to again communicate back and forth with the manufacturer regarding the rebates, when we receive them, and how they're recognized. So up until the end of December, the Finance Pharmacy Group has been preparing for this rebate pilot, because we have to make some internal changes in how finance recognizes these rebates, and how, and again, planning for the upfront costs that we would have to pay for these medications, which are, you know, several fold what we pay for them now.
I'm sorry, can I ask a question?
Yes.
So who is assisting you in submitting, not the name of the person, but so is it finance that then submits a claim on the pharmacy's behalf to get the rebate?
Well,
and then how long does it take to get the rebate?
So how this is initially set up is pharmacy has all the claims. What we would do, there's a portal. And so actually there's a portal that you register for, and what we would have to do, and this would be something pharmacy would do, probably with the assistance with IT, is upload this claims data on a regular basis. So we would have to upload this probably on a weekly basis, claims for these medications to this portal. And how HRSA initially set it up is that manufacturers were required, once they received the data and reviewed it, they were required to process the rebate and send it to back to the covered entity within 10 days. Okay. So that was the initial guidance, and that's how it was supposed to work. So, but it, where finance would have to change things comes into when, you know, when DJ presents financials, she talks about, you know, cost allocation based on cost, right? So if our medications are costing us 200, 300, 500% more upfront than we're currently paying, our cost allocation associated with those costs are going to go up significantly. And then the other piece of it would be, how do we recognize the rebate? Is it recognized as revenue, or is it recognized as a reduction in the cost later on? So in before we even started, that wasn't totally resolved yet. But it would certainly be a difference in a big change in the way that our finance would have to track our expense related to medications. Yes, sir.
So we haven't decided yet if it's going to be every quarter as a revenue or a cost reduction yet. Okay. And is there any report as of January, how are we doing, where we expect, what claims has been submitted for rebate, and see what we expect for it?
Yeah, well, the good news is we haven't had to do it because the program is
still
on hold. We haven't had to do anything with it. So that's the good news. But like I said, it's moving forward regardless,
good.
Right? So at some point, in some form, we're going to have to do it, okay?
So in the worst case, we are in the worst case scenario that we are not expecting any rebate right now. So
no.
Once it's approved, then maybe it's gonna be a good
exactly,
and
then we're gonna have to change our procedures because at this point, we don't receive rebates for medication purchases at this point. So it would be an adjustment for us. The other thing we did in preparation is really purchasing enough of these medications that it would get us through the remainder of this fiscal year. So we wouldn't have to make any changes on the finance side, on the accounting side, until next fiscal year. So we would essentially kind of begin this new process of purchasing and receiving rebates in fiscal year 27.
And what is average percentage of those rebates that if it's approved that we could expect when the program
approved? With the rebate pilot with this program, it's only 10 medications.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the initial thing. So actually, even in the first year, the impact would be relatively small. So for our health center, for the district, it's mainly an administrative burden for us and costs that we, again, setting this up, submitting the data, tracking the rebates. So more work for pharmacy, more work for finance in order to do this. Concern or real threat is if this, as this goes forward, this is just the first year. Subsequently, more medications will be added every year, and that's the plan. Because if manufacturers have their way, all 340B would be rebate based, right? And so that's. Initially, it's not going to be a big impact for us financially, but down the road, it could be a huge one for us.
I'm sorry, I have one last question. So,
yes, ma'am.
I understand, it hasn't been implemented yet. What about
in terms of manpower or team, like who would be, would it detract from the duties of the regular team members in your department to have to submit this, these rebates? I guess who would be handling that? Have you thought ahead of that? Like to funding, we have to think about.
Yeah, you're talking to them.
So, yes. Okay.
So it's with, again, me with the assistance of IT.
Okay.
But initially, again, it's not a lot of medications, it's not a lot of claims, so it's manageable at this point. Again, as the program grows, if it grows and becomes, you know, down the road, we would have to plan for additional resources. This initial rebate, this initial pilot, I'm not concerned about that. It will be additional work for us, but not a lot. So, but down the road, we would have to plan for additional resources if this becomes the standard.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions about the rebate model? Okay, we continue to monitor HRSA, what's going on. This is being discussed in Congress as well, and then there's ongoing court cases that are still unresolved regarding the rebate. So we're just continuing to monitor that, and we'll update you as things go on.
Okay. Thank you.
Next slide, please. Oh, I have to do my own. So the second piece is that we've been working on is the Gilead Free Drug Program. And in July, I brought to the committee this graph regarding the program. So just to review, this provides free medications. And in the case of the health center, these are HIV medications to uninsured patients. And the way the program has worked up until this point is that we would purchase the medications, we would dispense them from our pharmacy, Gilead would pay us for those medications, for those claims. So we would submit claims just like any other insurance company or payer, and we'd be reimbursed for them. Back in May, June, Gilead announced that they're no longer going to allow community pharmacies or outside pharmacies to participate in this program, and they would be phasing it out over the rest of 2025. And it would end, again, at the end of December, which it did. And so what we did is we looked at our volume of these medications, the revenue associated with them, and the margin, the gross margin that we see that we've realized as part of this program. And so what we projected over the last 6 months of the year is approximately, in the worst case, a loss of about $2.5 million in pharmacy revenue. As DJ pointed out, we are $1.5 million off of our budgeted revenue. So we were able to offset some of this loss a couple of different ways. One is, up until the end, we kept enrolling new patients in this program. So we would continue to enroll them throughout the year, through the end of the year. So we had new patients on the program. Also, any patients that were potentially insurable, we got them insurance, so they actually got off the program altogether. We kept the prescriptions. They have a different payer now. And then the other thing is just an overall increase in our volume. Instead of a $2.5 million loss in revenue, it's at this point $1.5 million. Okay. What this is our prescription volume over the last three fiscal years. So you see the bottom line is fiscal year 24. The midline orange one is fiscal 25, and the top one, the gray one, is 2026. So you see, volume-wise, the pharmacy, and since our inception, our volume has increased steadily every year. So this is our month-to-month trend. And so again, this is part of what helped us this year, because our prescription volume is up 35% over last year, same time. This is the pharmacy revenue and margin. So the top three lines are, again, those same 3 years are revenue. And the bottom three lines are the gross margin related to that revenue. So as you see, again, that green line is this year, the blue line is last year. So we started out the fiscal year in good shape. Our revenue was well above last year. Our margin was above as well. And then again, as more and more of these, we lost more and more of these prescriptions, more of these patients, we really kind of crossed that line in October. So the last quarter of the year here is where we've seen the real the impact really begin for the loss of these prescriptions. And you see the revenues down, revenue over, you know, so far this year, we're revenue's up 8%, but our margin is only 1% higher than last year. You see over the last 3 months, 4 months now, it's below 2025. And the driver of this program is what's causing that. This is our payer mix. So if you look nationwide, look at the U.S., that's a payer mix for prescriptions, commercial Medicare, Medicaid, and cash pay patients. That's what it looks like nationwide. And then the pharmacies here for the health center, that's our payer mix at, you know, commercial at 28%, and then Medicaid and the uninsured population that pays on the sliding fee scale. Most of our margin and much of our revenue is in that commercial tier, in that 28%. 4% of that was this program, which is now largely gone. So we're going to lose about 4% of that commercial, what we identify as commercial payer. So we are in a situation where we're probably not going to meet our revenue budget for this year, and possibly. It may be close. We'll see. We'll see how the rest of the year plays out. But we may again come close in line with last year. But it's unlikely we're going to exceed it as we have in the past.
Any reason why there's a big difference between us and the nationwide cash?
Well, it really mirrors the payer mix of the health center. And the populations we serve,
okay.
Right? So we serve a different population than the general public at large. So, and like I said, most, even though, you know, we have, again, we're talking about 52% uninsured on the cap, you know, they're paying on a sliding scale. That's really a break even or more like a loss for the pharmacy.
Wow.
Medicaid is really, it's great for the clinic, it's a break even for the pharmacy. Medicare, there's not enough to discuss. And then commercial, like I said, that's where the real margin is for the pharmacy. But, you know, the what's going to help us going forward. A couple of things: continue to increase volume, and so we can make up for some of this with volume. Continue to improve our payer mix, which, you know, David, Randy, you know, we've been moving in that direction anyway, so that'll somewhat mitigate this as well. And then as our clinic, you know, workflow and efficiency has certainly gotten better, looking at other services that may provide some additional prescription revenue for us with some of these higher cost medications like the HIV medications. Any other questions I can answer?
Does anyone from the board have any questions? Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we do have one more presentation. We are very cognizant of the time. So Felicia, I'm just going to ask that you just kind of do a high-level overview, maybe hit on any highlights for the board members.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Felicia for the record, and I'll be sharing some highlights of our fourth quarter at QHC clinical performance measures. Starting with clinical quality measures, just wanted to share some updates that were discussed in our QI work group recently. Just wanted to highlight that with tobacco use authorization, it's a measure where we realized that some of the mapping aspects of that measure weren't quite working, but we were able to fix it and increased our measure by 20%, ending the year with 71.4%. And then the last two bullet points, we have early entry into prenatal care, birth weight, as well as HIV and pregnant patients. Those are two measures that we are manually tracking and continuing to work on fixing the mapping aspect of the reporting software. I wanted to share with you our year-by-year comparison for our clinical quality measures. We have our performance in orange is the 2025 results. So far, I know we just submitted UDS, but just wanted to highlight that we had increases in measures such as the childhood immunization status measure with an increase of 18.8%. IBD use of aspirin, there was a 2.1% increase. And again, tobacco use screening and cessation, that's a measure we did increase by 14.8%. All in all, I do want to mention that it might seem like we haven't increased in a lot of measures, but the reason for that is because 2025 was a year of growth for us. We've seen more patients than we have in the years prior, and with that comes along an increase in the denominator for each of the measures. So in almost all the measures, we've seen increases, with some increasing by 2,000 patients. So measures like the BMI screening, and follow-up, depression screening and follow-up, as well as HIV screening. On this next slide, we have our site comparisons. So our organizational performance in yellow, Decatur performance in blue, and then Fremont in green. And I'm just gonna go ahead and move on to the next slide. We have our quality measure focus for 2025. All six of our measures listed on the left-hand side. We have our performance from 2024 compared to 2025, as well as our site-specific and organizational performance. Any numbers in green mean that we've surpassed our organizational target. And as you can see on the very right-hand side, we have met or surpassed our target for 2025. Just some items that we discussed during our recent quality improvement work group about what's working well, areas of opportunities, and next steps. A lot of it basically has to do with data validation and hygiene. I know that's kind of been an ongoing topic for us, but it's there's movement in that space, but we just want to hopefully focus that month over month and focus on one measure at a time so that we can improve in that aspect. Next, we have our patient satisfaction. Just some updates. We implemented our newly updated survey effective January 1st. So the next time I'll be sharing with you some newer updates about our patient satisfaction survey. We've implemented some questions that kind of satisfy the criteria for our PCMH or patients at our medical home recognition process, so more to come on that one. You were already probably familiar with our survey workflow, but any patients that complete an appointment will get a survey sent to them either via email, patient portal, or text. They'll get reminders, and then once the surveys are completed, we share that report with our staff and leadership team on a monthly cadence. This is just an overview of our participation responses, so number of surveys completed. We have data month over month on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, we have just the completion rate. As you can see, year over year, there isn't much of a variance, but at least this gives us kind of a look at how many patients have been participating thus far. I believe you're familiar with this as well. Quarter four results for service, location, and visit. Most of our patients still responding with, I received a received service in primary care. We have our location breakdown, and then on the bottom, we have patients saying that their visit was not for an illness, injury, or condition that needed care right away, and then the visit was as soon as they needed. We have our provider survey question breakdown as well. Our patients are saying that the provider was easy to understand. They listened carefully, they explained things in a way, I'm sorry, that was redundant. They listened carefully, and then they showed respect and spent enough time as well. Majority of our patients saying yes, definitely. We also have our staff scheduling and facility question breakdown. Patients are saying that our staff has been as helpful as they thought they should be, and they were also courteous and respectful. And as far as appointments and scheduling, it was easy to schedule, and overall cleanliness and appearance of facility was excellent as well. Here we have our Net Promoter Score. So patients are asked, how would you rate the overall care you receive from your provider, where 0 is the worst and 10 is the best. This is comparable to our likely to recommend. The likely to recommend question that most organizations have. And as an organization, we received 88. And then on the right-hand side, we have our site-specific breakdown. We ended the year with lots of positive comments. So this is just a general word cloud. The more frequently the words were used, the larger they are. So lots of our patients saying good service, thank you, excellent, and staff. And I just wanted to end with the last patient comment slide. This is newer, but we compiled our quarter four comments, patient comments, and the top three most commonly identified strengths. Patients were saying that we're friendly and our staff is friendly and caring. We provide excellent service, and then we have helpful and compassionate providers. And then for the three most commonly identified opportunities for improvement, our patients were mentioning that sometimes there's difficulty with getting timely appointments or there are long wait times. Sometimes there are problems with medication refills or communication regarding prescriptions. And then sometimes there are challenges scheduling follow-up or getting a referral. I do want to note that majority of the comments have a positive sentiment. So the three most commonly identified opportunities, that's a very small percentage of our comments, but we just wanted to shift our direction to see areas that we can improve in that aspect. So just wanted to share those comments as well. And that's all we have.
Does anyone have any questions? Any other board members? I don't think so.
Very good. Just a big thank you to Felicia. Felicia's really done a great job to advance our work in that space, particularly excited about some of the mapping that's resulting in those big improvements. And then just real quickly before I conclude, working with Dr. Lockett earlier this year, we did bring on an additional pharmacist, which relieved Dr. Bleek from some of his clinical pharmacist responsibilities. And obviously, from all that we just heard, the timing was very fortuitous, since he may be involved in a lot of other work that he wasn't doing before. So thank you, and that concludes the CEO comments.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda are the informational items. Community Health Center, FQHC, January 2026 monthly report.
That's just informational.
Okay. So, okay, great. All right. Next on the agenda, second public comment.
Okay, I see no one in the room for a second public comment, and there's no one online.
Okay, well, is there anything else that we need to go over? I don't see anything else on the agenda. So next is adjournment of this meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Oh my God. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.